welcome to Hope Is Not a Strategy, and Sascha, to your podcast. We're doing a dual live stream podcast, I would say. It's the Finance, Data and People podcast, also from Radial. So my name is Christian Underwood. I'm founder and CEO of Strategy Frame AI and host of Hope Is Not a Strategy. And I'm welcoming two other AI founders, or AI consulting founders, I should say, Dennis Schütz from Strategy Bridge AI and Dr. Sascha Hagemüller. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Christian. We're very excited for this.
Yes, absolutely. So it was your idea that we do that, and you invited me. So thank you very much that I can now ask the questions. But just as a brief introduction, I would say, can both of you give me just an elevator pitch of what your company is doing, just in a brief sense? Then I will explain how I fit into that. So, and Dennis, please, you could start.
Sure. So you could say we are a global database, but with an analyst on top. So what we deliver is data, any form of data on any given company on the world, you could say. So starting from financials, ownership data, contact data, whatever you need. And on top of that, we are allowing users to do real research on markets. So generating long lists, right, market studies, but also company studies. I think that's what's standing out the most, that on a given company, you can generate benchmarking analysis, multiple valuations, whatever you need, and in audit grade. I think that's the thing. So we are targeting high quality with what we deliver. So how high quality research, not only data. That's what Strategy Bridge is about.
Yes. Thank you. Sascha.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dennis and Christian. I always say we are tech-enabled finance transactions and value creation services boutique. So yes, we do consulting. Yes, we do consulting in the PE environment and along the deal cycle of a private equity investor in any finance-related topic. But our USP is that we bring together CPA backgrounds, transaction expertise, and a data engineering and an AI side of things. And that's pretty unique on the market to have both expertises sitting at one table and then really implementing projects and solutions for our clients instead of just painting beautiful slides. So that's a little bit the approach that Radial follows.
Yeah, great. And I'm in between both of you. So Dennis is helping to acquire the companies. You're helping to sell. We are doing the strategy in between. No one really cares, but in the end, should care. So
I know a couple of clients from you, Christian, and they do absolutely care, I can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a topic today, and it's a little bit provocative. I'm not sure if the live stream on LinkedIn is already working, but anyway, we will put that on our podcast streams, so you will find it anyway. We have the title of Why We Still Hire in the Age of AI, or I should say why you are, both of you are still hiring. I'm not hiring at the moment. And how AI is rewriting the M&A deal cycle. So in every investor deck that has an AI slide, almost none has an AI result. Why? That's the question. And yesterday, the AI company DeepL from Cologne announced a cut of, I think, 1/4 of all employees. So they're around thousands, and they're cutting 250 to become an AI first company also in their operations. So the first questions goes to you, Dennis. So you're still growing in your team and shipping AI for M&A. So what does that tell us, that you're still growing in team?
So, speaking of DeepL and all the other news you see on the news flow where they now cut people because of AI, the question is now, do they really do it because of AI, or did they overhire in the past and now see that as a good chance to get rid of people? Because I think the reason why we still hire is very simple. Two engineers with AI are still faster than one engineer with AI, right? That's the very simple math we have. And what we are doing is not just punching Claude and whatever in the face of our clients. And yeah, for that, I would definitely need not an engineering team. But what we do is different, right? So AI is enabling us for sure, is making us a lot faster, without a doubt. But the hard mm-hmm. work is still, for instance, data engineering, right? It's very difficult still in this age to get high quality data without intersection of humans. So our data engineering team is obviously growing. We need to fulfill highest quality requirements there. Then also, maybe that's more a general topic of AI, but the question we have to ask us is not only do we make our clients faster, that's probably the simpler take, but more important, can we make them even better? And also there, so when we innovate, when we deploy new features, there are still tons of things to be done outside the typical AI bubble. Generating new data points, again, what I mentioned in my first words on business analysis and audit grade, right? This is not something that would simply come out of AI. So we need to still work a lot with financial mathematics, et cetera, pp. And as a growing company, and most probably in the audience would agree, we are still in a people's business, right? So also your sales team still needs to grow. I think very difficult to not work with outbound sales, to not have first-person mm-hmm. contact with your clients. So I think these are the heavy hitters and obvious reasons why you would still hire as a growing company.
Yeah, and on LinkedIn, I experienced that for outbound, you can do everything now with AI. But I think all of us are in a really trust environment, so trust first, and there I think you need real people just to get that done. But Dasha, how does that look like with your team on the, let's say, on the end, on the other side of the deal cycle?
Yeah, it's actually similar. I mean, if we would be a consulting firm that would operate globally already and would have a research team with 2,000 employees, for example, then of course I would have an issue too. But I think we are lucky enough that we founded this business 4 years ago, and we are roughly 35 people now and still have a very, very low overhead for the size of our team. And now the question is rather, okay, how can we increase the output per team member? It's the same what Dennis basically mentioned. But the output requirements are growing way faster than I could hire people, and I still need to hire people. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a similar issue. If you go into a portfolio company of a PE, for example, after the closing of the business, and it's all about getting this AI strategy working in finance or around controlling, reporting, and stuff like that, the first question that comes up is, where's the data for it? Yeah. And the issue is that many of these companies have legacy systems, they have old systems. The trend was also in the past that, yeah, for every problem that existed in a company, a new software was implemented from mm-hmm. a very siloed perspective. And then when you go towards value creation or towards an exit, the issue is that all these data pools don't talk to each other. Yeah, so you somewhere have a pricing table, and at the same time you have procurement prices, mm-hmm. but at the end you want a contribution margin automatically, but these two data sources are not talking to each other, mm-hmm. and they cannot be accessed automatically. So a lot of stuff is happening around the data engineering as well, as Dennis mentioned. So you mm-hmm. need the people that actually are able to bring the data from legacy systems into a central data warehouse. And nowadays it's still difficult to tell Claude, hey, please create a VPN connector into that system without talking to the IT department or potentially external suppliers for these things. Mm-hmm. So 80-90% of actually getting an AI strategy going for a portfolio firm is still the data foundation. And this will also be the case for the next months and years from my perspective, because any regular medium-sized entity in Germany that you might be aware of don't have a controlling or don't have sufficient data. So either the data needs to be generated or the data is somewhere and it needs to be accessed. And only if that is taken care of, then AI can reach its full potential, because it actually needs the context of the data. Otherwise, you always have to feed it again. And at the end, you do the same mistake that you, from a siloed perspective, create your own AI tools, and then 10 years later you have the same issue nowadays with all these heterogeneous software solutions. So companies are pretty much on the verge right now to make the same mistake again, to be honest. And I think it would be very good if they wouldn't this time and think it through a little bit more in depth. Yeah,
absolutely. It always comes down to processes and data when you want to enable the AI systems or any other digital system. So, and what we are experiencing that, because we are kind of a hybrid, we have a hybrid solution for that. So they're bringing in their data. We're not, because we're in a strategy process. So after doing that, or we have on the one side the data from Dennis and his team ready a hand for our corporate clients, and they can use that. We can also crawl market data. That's also really helpful. But answering really simple questions: where do you earn your money, and what are your customer segments? So really simple questions. They're not prepared for that normally. Or what are your top five customers? So therefore, you are implementing then a system on a more sustainable way. You have more time, and I think therefore the funnel from coming from Dennis going through the strategy process and then end up in your system also is really helpful for the clients and get them more clarity. I think that's pretty important. But
funny note on that is, I think if you look at LinkedIn, Sasha is the face why we should actually do this. I think every month you're posting, Sasha, our new joiners, and like five new faces showing up, right? So I think, just a side note, very typical for what we're talking about right now.
Okay. Yeah, crazy. I think we're struggling a little bit with the live stream. So it's our first live stream. So I have some different data information. From the one side, they're writing it's not live. The other part is writing it is live. So what is the truth? We will find out later on. let's see. But we're learning on the way, I would say. That's the point. So, but Dennis, let me take me a little bit into sourcing. So what actually really changes when AI gets serious and not, the hype cycle? So, and when I come to corporate clients, they're telling me now, oh, we have now Copilot. And when we do that now for the CEO office, we do the analysis part, et cetera, with Copilot.
So I think that's better than nothing, right? So for sure, that's very nice. AI can help in lots of ways. So if you want to, instead of doing a Google research, want to know the 10 most important companies in a segment, the quality you would get from any AI system will be quite nice. I can tell that especially because we also started in the pre-AI era, right, in the beginning of 2020. And how we came up with lists at that time was majorly centered around keyword search, which was okay. So you got something, right? But probably the so-called false positive rate, so companies showing up that shouldn't show up, was sometimes over 50%. So you had to look at three companies to get more or less certainly a good hit. And what changed since then, I think, are in technology-wise, two things. So first of all, we now have more power in structuring text data, which is powerful. So what we essentially do is when we get a company in our database, we look at what is the product service of that business? What is the end client? Where in the value chain is the business? Is it a manufacturer? Is it a distributor or both? And also at the business model. So very important data, which we can structure. And then the second advantage is, of course, semantic search. So that we, instead of looking at simple words, we have the ability to really understand, even though they don't mention the same words, they're still doing the same, essentially. And that is where the power gets in. The problem why I would especially like users that do where sourcing is very important. So getting a list of companies you want to buy or you want to sell your company to, especially when you have such a situation, like if you use an AI system, you're still a strong slave to Zeo, for instance, right? So you will find the companies that want to be found. That's a big problem. So how we solve it is simple. We are doing that same thing in our database of 50 million businesses. So we have a completely democratized data set and can show that really every company that needs to show up really shows up. Another problem is these AI systems are not built to generate long lists, right? Good luck of generating a list of a couple of hundred clients. That's not what their calculation capacity works with. Mm-hmm. And that is that will be also at least a midterm problem with these. So years ahead until you can get a high-quality list of hundreds of companies, again, in a local environment, in a dedicated setup where we can fine-tune calculation costs such that we can generate that with sensitive costs, let's say, sensible costs rather. I think that's where the power kicks in of still niche solutions, you could say, like ours.
Yeah, great. And I just hand over to Sascha because I always get the question, is a AI ready to do some of, let's say, finance calculations? I had a talk yesterday that someone said, AI cannot do that. So and there's so many myths out there that they do not believe it can simply do one plus one thing. So, and you're doing it in finance, then is doing really great calculations. So Sascha, your statement on that, please.
It definitely can. I mean, I still stick to what I've mentioned before, that the database or the data context needs to be provided. So this is definitely the truth and where I say where the real power lies. But if the data is provided in a proper way, or if you, for example, need an integrated financial model or a business plan based on drivers or assumptions, and you nowadays in 2026 start to set up a manual Excel file, honestly, you're like looking backwards. Yeah. So no financial modeling project needs to be done completely manually nowadays. If I look at Claude, it can create integrated financial models. And I did that like a couple of months ago already. And then I was already laughing as a finance guy because in the first run, the balance sheet didn't tie up. So I was like, didn't manage. But then it actually corrected itself, yeah, and said, oh, the balance sheet is not tying up and has the same amounts on each side. So we need to correct this, and then it goes through it and stuff like that. So especially within financial modeling and also due diligence, we already do a lot of things AI-based. That doesn't mean that actually you have tremendously less work around it, but you can actually go deeper and actually create the insights that are more interesting than just paraphrasing the annual reports and trying to use the budget for manual data work. Mm-hmm. But instead you can actually work on the in-depth content together with the management team and really finding out, hey, how is that business creating money? What are the verticals that are worthwhile to consider? Can the business be cut into specific verticals that the specific company doesn't look at yet and stuff like that? And how is actually money flowing through the business? So also a financial due diligence can be created much more commercially also, that you really understand the business, look at the verticals, look how the money flows through the business and what the value actually is that is created by this business that you want to buy. So it creates a lot of room to actually go even deeper what we already did before. So I would definitely say that AI can help in that regard. Of course, you need to look into it in depth from a human perspective, from a finance expert's perspective, but not using it is like not an option anymore from my perspective.
I would say it's stupid not using it, but also like it was in the past, I would say, not every Excel sheet was perfectly developed and without any mistakes. Huh? So there have been people doing failures and wrong calculations and wrong code, I would say, in the past in the Excel. So that's the way things are happening. And that's how it is.
Exactly. And one addition on that. So I of course, completely agree. Like the modeling and everything, that was never the hard part, though, right? So what is getting commoditized now is, I think, again, something that is speeding you up crazy. But like building the model, populating it with the right data, that was never the hard part. I think what is the hard part still is getting assumptions, right? So very well thought through assumptions on how you calculate a beta, let's say, how you do the forecasting of the business, which is not only a function of history, which is also a function of your best take at the moment on the future on a given market. And I think that is really where, as Sasha explained, where the human still kicks in, that you really get trust on your assumptions, because that is a hard function. And just getting a result by AI, not knowing how exactly it came up with it, and you will never know, that's a problem. Yeah.
Maybe adding in that regard, especially when you think about financial models and stuff like that, I see a very, very high danger. I think our generation has an advantage right now because we built these models from scratch. Late at night, 100 times. So we know exactly how the result should look like and how an investor looks at it. If I'm a very young employee now and I just use AI blindly, so to say, and not questioning what I'm actually creating, that's a big mistake. And I'm very much, concerned how the future education will look like, in consulting firms, because actually people also need to learn what they actually want the AI to create at the end, because otherwise you don't have a clue. We'll see how that will show up. But as you say, Dennis, like really knowing what the goal should be and the end result is at the end driving your prompting style, and your prompt actually drives the result. So I think that's still important to really think about that. Also, when we think about our data warehouses and we connect these with AI solutions and stuff like that, probably half of the time goes into the prompt and really explaining the AI basically what do you find in which column in this huge database, what does it describe, where are the issues, where are gaps maybe, and stuff like that. So the technological part is not the issue, but really prompting correctly and feeding the details into the solution will actually enable a better result at the end. And this is maybe also where people struggle currently sometimes, that the prompts are just not sufficient to enable the AI to do the job.
Totally different perspective from my side, because we are shipping a solution that also goes directly to uneducated end customers, I would say. Don't get me wrong, they're really well-educated business people on our client side, but maybe they haven't done strategy in their whole business life. So therefore, why we have real frameworks, and it's pretty clear what happens with the data, and our agents with the different tools are processing that. And we have a lead consultant agent for the strategy that is assessing the prompts that are coming, and they are always not on the level you need them. So we rewrite the prompting and redirect the user to the different tasks and help them, and also showing them visually what the end result should look like, and give them examples, and the agents, the data, etc., is directly presented in that format. So and we even do that directly now in the chat. And you can then export that direct, because we do not believe that people will be, become the best prompters in the world. So that's why we also implemented the voice feature. So doing strategy with voice, but it totally changed the game for the people, because they knew their sales, they knew their supply chain things. So they're experts in really great fields, and they just have to talk. And when they talk, they give enough context, and then our tool should do the rest. So this is a little bit more of my perspective, because we have some also consultants in there, certified partners, and also we are doing it. But in the end, in our perspective, it should be done by the end customers. But for sure, how to have a consultant in the future, yes. But I think there will be a total different skill set that they're focusing on, and it will be different people also. Not that, as I would say, I was never the right finance guy. So I studied political science as a first study. So nothing to do with numbers. So and then went into strategy, which is not a real finance thing. It's just the, let's say, 20 out of the 80%. But I would say that makes it, I think, there will be different people in consulting doing different things tomorrow. So, and I see that's changing a little bit. But
your clients are running around now all saying, make no mistakes, right? Instead of writing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, but when it comes to, we have, for example, we are also doing for nonprofits, and it's really funny. We have that for Caritas. So we have nurses doing strategy, doing OKRs, doing project portfolio, and therefore it should work for everyone who needs clarity. But let me come back to you, Sascha. On every fund has now an AI officer. So where do they come from, and isn't that a real progress?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you do strategy as well. So strategy is always a broad term. And I mean, we have an AI officer as well, but actually our AI officer is someone who can actually code and understand LLMs and actually create workflows and agents and is a hands-on person. I think what's currently the issue sometimes is that there is a gap between creating, how should I say, an AI strategy or an AI roadmap on a slide in the Ivory Tower in Frankfurt versus then actually implementing it somewhere in your medium-sized or small to medium-sized entity on the countryside, where you have people 50 plus sitting in the finance department, and then coming around the corner and saying, hey, we are doing AI now, and then following the path to say, okay, now everyone gets a ChatGPT or a Claude license, and then you're suddenly an AI company, which is a complete BS, to be honest. We are actually currently conducting a study which is called Winning the Value Creation Game, where we talk with approximately 100 or more than 100 private equity investors about the whole value creation process. Mm-hmm. And it's actually very interesting that because we have one question that basically asks how high do you assess the AI potential in different corporate functions? Yeah, along like basically the Porter value chain, where you have finance and then IT and HR and then production, procurement, etc. And the potential is assessed very high in every area. HR is a little bit lower, quite interestingly, because they say, okay, there's still a lot of human interaction and you need to create a certain vibe and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in every other department, the potential is deemed to be very, very high. And then we do a question after this and say, okay, interesting, but now let us know what the concrete use cases are that you are working on. And then it's very quiet in the room. Yeah. And I think this is where the discrepancy currently lies, because again, the data context is not existing. So AI cannot be really deployed, and real use cases cannot be really deployed if AI is not intertwined with every piece of data in the business. Yeah. And just installing a few AI licenses here and there in their silos is not changing anything. Of course, maybe a presentation is created a little bit quicker, or an email is corrected, or whatever. But this has nothing to do with AI readiness or an AI enablement in a business. And therefore, I think that the AI thesis is not written in the investor's office. The value around AI is really created on site, in the countryside, where the business is, and where the change needs to happen, and stuff like that. And I also had a conversation actually a few weeks ago with an investor who said we want to do we want to create an AI first company with that one portfolio firm. Mm-hmm. So the first step we actually need is a new ERP system, because the current ERP system is not AI ready. Yeah. Okay. So the step would have been to buy a new ERP system for probably 500 1,000 euros, which would need 2 years to be implemented. Mm-hmm. And then you would have the same bad data and the same bad processes in a new environment. And then this ERP provider would say, now you can use our AI or whatsoever. Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's really which is still not working.
No, which is still not working. So it's and these like false concepts around AI and which are also promoted by some AI specialists, mm-hmm. so to say, mm-hmm. they are wasting money. They are destroying value, actually, that you could really easily build with a central data warehouse. Mm-hmm. Connect your AI to that warehouse. It doesn't matter which systems there are, try to gradually improve the quality of your data, connect the AI to it, and then build your agent and build your workflows instead of like relying on systems and stuff like that. So there are really, really wrong decisions made right now from my perspective that destroy value rather than creating it.
Absolutely. And when it comes to, let's say, one function, the C-level itself, so what kind of solution do they really need? And coming also again to, let's say, M&A consulting boutique firms. So, Dennis, you are doing a great job and your team on that with your solution, because it's also not just – because here we have kind of a, let's say, plug-and-play solution. So it's just – out of the box. So you do not need the data warehouse to build up, because you're at the front end. That makes it a little bit easier. But can you please tell us, so how you're building that kind of data warehouse? What do you need? And what are the main challenges for the client accessing that data with the AI?
I think that's the big benefit of focus, right? And focus on a niche, as you said, the M&A space. So we know perfectly from A to Z the whole process these experts need. So they need data. And what usually data means is, of course, it means data on the single business, so their mandate, let's say. So we need to make it as easy as possible that they get that data into our platform with all the security mm-hmm. necessities, right? So nobody else will see that data. But essentially, that is the only time they would actually need to put something outside in into our platform. Mm-hmm. And the rest is our job, I would say. So when you give in that company name, as I said, when we started with the sourcing topic in a sell side case, we would find through our database all relevant buyers. If we should miss one because you wouldn't know that they're doing something in that space, the client could easily add them. But usually what they would say is, fantastic, all relevant buyers have been found via the platform. And then, they need the contact data, need to know how to contact them. And then, of course, generating the outputs, the marketing material, let's say. So from teaser mm-hmm. to info memo. Mm-hmm. Historically, what we have done is we generated the heavy hitter analysis parts of that, right? So what the users got was in their own template, in their own design, the PowerPoint outputs. They could just drag and drop it into their slide. Now with the next update, we will also take that over. So generate the full-fledged PowerPoint report. So that's the, I think, big benefit of what we're doing, of focusing that, right? That is never possible if now, I don't know, another use case comes in, whoever needs a PowerPoint presentation, a sales guy from a random sales business make a pitch with us. That will be difficult. Mm-hmm. But as long as our client focus are part of our ICPs, M&A, buy side, audit, they will get exactly the results they need, more or less at the click of a few buttons.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. And then please, Sasha, we come to your playbook. So please show us a little bit. So how does it actually look like? Because I hear now, cleaning up the data, building data warehouse, and then in a portfolio company, it's like, oh my God. So we've never done that. So what is your magic sauce that you can make it really happen?
Yeah, I would say, to make it simple, behind every kind of system, there is a database. And the database is usually just a table, right? Or a few tables, multi-dimensions, whatsoever. So mm-hmm. The simplest form is probably like a CRM system, for example, like Pipedrive or whatsoever, where you basically have an Excel file in a in a web context, up to SAP for HANA or something, where you have huge amounts of different data sources and stuff like that. So at the end, every ERP is creating data that is sometimes manually, sometimes automatically inserted into these systems. And every kind of insertion or bookkeeping, booking, whatever, is like one line or whatsoever in this database. And at the end, in order to create a warehouse, you basically just need to access this database somehow that the system creates and make sure that you pull the data automatically from that database. Yeah, either you usually you mirror it into a separate database overnight that the main system is not struggling with the request. And so you feed a central data warehouse with that data. Yeah, if it's an on-premise system, you have a VPN connection or something. Mm-hmm. If it's a cloud system, it's sometimes easier. Some systems have a direct API and stuff like that. So we usually set up that central data warehouse by basically pulling the data from these various systems.
Okay.
And then like a VLOOKUP, trying to somehow intertwine them. Yeah, by, I don't know, a project number where you basically connect, for example, then time recordings with project calculations or stuff like that, or via a product number that you connect the pricing table with like the procurement costs from the warehousing system, for example. So you create a closed data warehouse that allows it at the end to connect data that hasn't been connected before. And this is actually the most complex and most or the task with the most effort required. And then you visualize that data. That can happen via Excel, that can happen with Power BI, whatsoever. We are very flexible in that regard. And then you usually see the data issues or the data quality issues, because as soon as it gets transparent, you see the gaps in the data. Yeah, are data sets missing? Are, for example, product cohorts not maintained, and so on and so forth. And based on the transparency, you can then walk backwards in the process and understand, okay, where's the data governance leaking? Yeah. Mm. For example, do I have a CRM system, but sales never takes care of certain fields because they are not obligatory, or they are not dropdowns, but free text fields, for example. Mm-hmm. And then we can think about the future data governance concept, where we say, okay, these might be mandatory fields in the future. This might rather be a dropdown instead of a free text field and stuff like that. And so you basically already have a central brain of the company with all data in there, which is consolidated and which gets cleaner and cleaner over time, which is updated once per night. So you also look on more or less real-time data, and then you visualize that with Power BI or Excel, for example. And then you have a view on your P&L life, your balance sheet, your cash flow statement, your working capital, your net debt, whatsoever. But on the other side, also on operational KPIs, where you can dive into contribution margins per product, per client, per sales channel, per region, whatsoever, and really make in-depth analysis. And what we then do when this like central like data warehouse is created and getting cleaner and cleaner, we then connect an AI solution where we are currently working with LangDoc, which is GDPR compliant, that gets connected to the data warehouse. This is actually our main solution. And then a controlling or reporting guy can basically chat with the data in natural language without using SQL statements or stuff like that. So the solution basically translates natural requests into SQL language, gives back, the database gives back SQL language, which then is again translated into natural language. And then you can ask them, okay, with which clients are we creating the highest losses? In which regions are we selling the wrong products? Did we purchase goods and services where prices got increased, but we didn't forward them to the customer, for example, and stuff like that. And then you really have an AI-based reporting and controlling and also value creation engine that can support you on the way to create value. Mm-hmm. And again, all dependent on the database. Yeah, connecting the data warehouse with that AI solution and make it work is a matter of like 2 to 4 days to really make it work. Mm. But creating the data warehouse and really making sure that the database is correct is a matter of a couple of weeks, rather sometimes month, in order to make sure that this is working and really working. Running.
Yeah, okay. And I found it really interesting. So that would have been my questions. How long does it take you? So Dennis have an out-of-the-box solution with the own database that comes directly to the clients in the M&A field. So we are doing the hybrid mode, crawling data, but also using data from the customers, and they're going to their systems. And we say for strategy, we just need that kind of data from your controlling, and we connect it with the outside data. And you can chat with everything over there, also the projects and the OKRs. And you are going deeper in, let's say, the data foundation, building the lake data lakehouse, and then adding AI on top of that to make it work in a longer run, I would say. So also three really different use cases of AI, but also usage of AI on top, AI baked in, AI as pure. And here I think we see that how consulting is changing in that field, and that there's not just one solution to the problem, and to each problem there are different solutions, and we're trying to find the best ways that are really possible to do so. So looking to the time, I would like to ask now, let's say, just one last question to both of you, and then just one overall question. For those not listening on LinkedIn now, because they can't, and they're maybe listening in our podcast, so we're sorry that the stream didn't start in the event. We don't know why, but that is, you know, also in our companies today, when you're working with AI, when you're working with software, there can always a bug. It's not like a PowerPoint slide where you can control 100% of the typo and that everything is right. So you have to be a little bit more, careful, of course, but also some things happen, and we're sorry for that, but we will ship it over our podcast streams anyway. So Dennis, overall, being in the journey coming from the banking world where you originally started, where do you think is it going for you in your special field on the front end? You're optimizing the work for the people there. They're getting faster and faster. Data quality is increasing. But how far can you go?
So
what is your vision, I would say?
So our vision is, amongst many, is we are, of course, preparing for a world where more or less most of our users will be agents. That is a very relevant scenario which we prepare for, of course, right? So that we build our APIs, our MCP coverage in a way that whenever somebody doesn't want to do the handwork, right, get it perfectly visualized, whatever they need, but instead, yeah, do a let an agent do whatever they want. That we still feed them with the right, not only data, but what we are creating on top of that is information, right? So a valuation, for instance, nobody cares about the just sole number you get out of it, right? You want to understand really how did they get to that number? What are transactions of similar businesses that happened? Whatever got you, what is like a size adjustment, a performance adjustment of that business? So to deliver information, really, that's, I think, a world we are focusing on. And there, of course, the solution survives that not only gives the easiest access to data, that is, of course, important, but also, as you said, the highest quality in data. And this is just dirty work sometimes that needs to be done in creating all these data sets, these pieces of information, such that you can get the best possible output of it. Mm-hmm. But there is, of course, also another scenario. So I think also, and this will sustain for a couple of years, I'm sure, is you still have the users that tell their clients, look, we are still humans doing that. You get full expertise. There's no database that is capturing my 40 years of experience. Also, still for them, I think we are demanded to build the best possible user experience still for humans. and ensure that they know each step what is happening. They can intervene. Also, that is a very important part still in the future, right? What if you're unsatisfied with data you get? Is there a simple way to intervene? A big important UX topic to also deliver that, so that somebody with decades of experience or years of experience is usually also something worth mentioning. They can still get exactly the outputs they need, just a lot faster, just with access to information they wouldn't have otherwise. Mm-hmm. So what we are seeing is going forward, you have, of course, with the AI space, incredibly speed up in what percentage of your process can be completely automatized with a generic tool that is heavily increasing. But then you still have the parts where details matter, where everything belongs on the foundation, as Sasha mentioned it minutes ago. And that needs to be on point. That means the best possible foundation you can get. And this is where we prepare for. This is what we essentially stand for as a business, to deliver highest possible quality. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, great. And Sasha, from your side, are you looking for, let's say, a fixed agent set when you're entering tomorrow to a company and they are collecting the data and building the data warehouse autonomously? Is that kind of your vision or something else?
I mean, you can think about every scenario, to be honest. We are on high alert, I would say, be on the forefront of all the developments out there. I mean, I remember me saying half an hour ago, currently, you still need data engineers in order to actually create the data, or to actually connect systems into the data warehouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that is still the case in a year, I don't know. Yeah, maybe you prompt an agent and say, hey, please connect me to the client's interface and pull out the data once per night. These are the access, this is the password and the username for it. I'm sure this might be the case. I still think that there's a lot of groundwork to be done in the industry out there, and there will be still a lot of manual work because usually the businesses are not as far as we are. But that is definitely a challenge we think about, and also. On the other hand, like if you think about financial due diligence, for example, where you have a data room, for example, that is filled with data by the target business, and all the data room suppliers out there, I'm sure they build their solutions for this because this might be a new way of doing business for them. Yeah, to be honest, to actually creating an environment to do due diligence in the data room, and all the due diligence might also be shifted into an earlier stage where I could imagine that a lot more due diligence is already done before the LOI instead of now after the LOI and all these things. Mm. On the other hand, I have to say I'm an optimist by nature. I need to be as an entrepreneur. And I say for a consulting firm, there is a, like us, like a boutique, maybe not the large ones, but for a boutique firm, there's a huge option right now to actually increase margins on our businesses, because every product at the end has a value for the customer. So a financial due diligence that is required by the bank, for example, will always have a price. Yeah, maybe in 1 or 2 years this price might half or be a third of the current price. But then the only question I have to ask myself as an entrepreneur is, how many of these do I do more? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I'm able to provide, I don't know, if due diligence costs like a third of a due diligence nowadays, but I do six times as many in the future, then I increase my margin. So for us, that's also a huge lever or a huge opportunity to actually become more profitable in the future if we do it right. Yeah. So we are pushing towards everything. We try to change as quickly as possible. It's even challenging for us sometimes. It's also challenging for the team. I still have discussions where people come and say, hey, we cannot write that many proposals at the same time. I say this is the wrong way of thinking. The right way of thinking is, how do we create an agent or a workflow or a process that makes us write proposals quicker, or ideally that an AI automatically generates a 90% version of a proposal in the future. That's the way of thinking, and that's the change that needs to happen. Mm. And to round that up, I think the biggest mistake right now for every company out there is to wait for the right solution that will emerge. Yeah, because it might be smart to actually buy the tool in a year that works best, but the main issue that remains is that the change in the team doesn't happen, and that the change in the way of thinking doesn't happen. And this change is only happening when you try out stuff. Yeah. And this is sometimes against the nature of a German human being, but you have to try it. And when you try it and test it and also go into certain risks with it, then you actually win at the end, because then your team is ready to adopt the right tool in the moment it comes out. So yeah, trying out, being on the forefront of it, paying someone in our team who is an actual AI engineer, actual data engineer, maybe hiring more of them and trying to push that forward as quickly as possible. That's the way to go. But in reality and not in PowerPoint. That's what we are pushing towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you also have the aspect of accountability, right? I think also that is something where everybody questions, how will that evolve, right? So we take full accountability for what we do. A consultant, especially with the bank case you made, right? They are very interested to know when something doesn't work, who's the one to be blamed. Yeah, I think also that is something that will still persist and still needs, yeah, this or saves our ass, right?
Absolutely. So to bring it to the point, it's just do it with AI. So I think that's really important. And let me please share just kind of our vision that we're doing. And for me is having both of you also here in the podcast, but also kind of that solutions in our solution. So we're talking about a strategic decision intelligence because that is in the most companies not there. The strategic decision intelligence is one person with a gut feeling, with biases, etc. And when we want to make that better with better data, with more clarity from outside in data, the data in the warehouse, so on all that stages, and bring it together in a simple form, and we will launch that on the 1st of June on your mobile. So that's basically the idea, to ask all of that kind of question, having dashboards for the burning KPIs of your business. But most of them today don't know what are their most burning KPIs. So this is a way to go also for our clients, for all of our clients, I think. And we're on a journey now. We do not know where it will end, but we're sure it's better to start now or yesterday than tomorrow. And therefore, one last sentence to maybe, yeah, let's say PE partners watching here, this live remote podcast. What's the move on Monday they should do, Dennis?
Reach out to us, of course, if they...
We put everything in the show notes for sure.
No, but seriously, I think... Sasha put it in the right phrase, right? Waiting is the worst thing you can do. And usually if like time is money and you have two options, basically, you can now try to start out what many do. And I think for good reasons is the make decision, right? Mm-hmm. So you do make the issue. And we've seen that now more of a dozens of times is, when you start making, you will know the actual result. You will know the impact of what you are doing earliest months later, right? After weeks, you never have something where you feel trustworthy in saying, okay, this isn't heading where we wanted to. This has major flaws. You will still continue to invest time, right? Nobody, psychologically, we don't see sunk costs as humans, right? We continue to optimize. And there is the... advantage out there, right? There are many tools. There are many tool providers that focus on a single niche they're handling, which did that already successfully for hundreds of other clients, where you immediately, the second you buy, the next day you will have access. You have a working solution that will work. And so what we actually tell to our clients is, okay, fine, do your make, please. Very happy. We're not standing in your way. Take our solution as the benchmark. Take it. That's right. What the market delivers right now. Take us and try try to make us obsolete with your make efforts. And I think that is something mm-hmm. I would challenge everybody. Do that, not waste your time. Start with the working solution right now. And then we are very happy to get into competition with make efforts. I think that's the fairest you can get it, right?
Absolutely. Great. Sasha, what would you say?
Audit your portfolio company's data foundation. I think mm-hmm. that's the biggest step. And don't think about AI and an AI roadmap. Think about how you get the data together in order to enable AI at the end. And please do not think about the idea that an ERP system might solve your problems. Yeah, it's really about the data. Mm-hmm. And if you can work with an IBM AS/400 solution from 1989, mm-hmm. if the bookkeeping is clean, you can still build an SQL database around it and digitalize the whole process and make it AI ready. Mm-hmm. So don't believe the usual pitfalls in PE. Really think about the data foundation and then do it step by step and start implementing on Monday. Yeah, that's it.
That's great. And just my last cent to it. So hope is not a strategy, and you need a strategy, but for strategy, you need everything. You need the data, you need the processes, you need AI, but you need the people in your portfolio companies, but also in your PE team. So therefore, I would say it's bring them in harmony and just start tomorrow. So therefore, I would like to thank both of you, Dennis and Sasha, for this first live session we did, and we just did it. So we made some mistake, but we will be better the next time we do it. So thank you very much for listening. And we put everything that we discussed in the show notes, and you can reach out to all of us. If you have any questions on LinkedIn, we are always available and looking forward to that. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you too. Sorry to the audience. See you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Christian.
Jetzt kommt Werbung. Ihr kennt unser Buch Hoffnung ist keine Strategie und hört auch gerne unseren Podcast. Dann haben wir jetzt was Neues für euch, nämlich das Strategie-Magazin. Hoffnung ist keine Strategie. Was erwartet euch in unserem neuen Magazin, das einmal im Quartal erscheint? Jeweils ein spezielles Fokusthema, wo wir wirklich in die Tiefe gehen. Das wird beim ersten Mal das Thema Strategic Decision Intelligence sein. Dann 2 bis 3 Case Studies, wo wir zeigen, wie Unternehmen mit der Strategy Frame AI einen wirklichen Unterschied machen. Und auch Expertenbeiträge, Interviews und auch hier und da der kleine Blick hinter die Kulissen von Strategy Frame AI. Von daher, wenn ihr das Magazin abonnieren wollt, meldet euch gerne bei uns auf www.hoffnungistkeinestrategie.de. Werbung Ende.